Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Bear Breath Podcast is back. NFL Divisional Weekend is upon us. I'm the Bear Crits Felica, Jeff Schwartz, in our New York studio. Will and Sammy P will join us later in the gambling group chat. So wildcard weekend, super wildcard weekend. I stand corrected. It's come and gone. Six games. Underdogs won three outright. Did very good against the number. So it's left us with, I shouldn't say the matchup we kind of wanted, because I think people would have liked to have seen Dallas, San Francisco again, even though, I don't know, I kind of like the fact that someone else, we've seen what San Francisco has done to Dallas the last couple of years. But we get that Chiefs-Bills matchup late Sunday. Overall, thoughts coming out of wildcard weekend and into these weekends, four games, Jeff?
Yeah, my thoughts are you need a dynamic quarterback to win a Super Bowl. I mean, you know, like I know that maybe the one counter to that is what Jared Goff is doing in Detroit. But you look at what Jordan Love did in that game and how dynamic he was against a guy like Dak Prescott. Very clear in that game who was the better quarterback, who was more dynamic, who made better plays. Look at the Texans-Browns game, right? Who was more dynamic, who made better throws. Now, Flacco obviously came back down to earth. We had Houston special teams defensive score, so I was pretty pumped that they got that obviously twice. You only win one time, but it happened twice. And so, you know, the more dynamic quarterback tends to win these games. Now, obviously, the offense you play in can help you be more dynamic, but that's my biggest takeaway. And we look at this weekend, and we look at the AFC, and you have Lamar and Stroud and Allen and Mahomes. The NFC, the kind of disparity in quarterbacks where you have Purdy against Love, and you have Goff and Mayfield. But still, big spreads, right? Two games near 10 points, one game near a touchdown. But divisional round weekend, Bear, is the best weekend in the National Football League. We should have some great games.
Yeah, no, it is. I always equated the divisional round with these like two games each day, and kind of like you get the one seeds involved again. It's kind of like that second round NCAA tournament on Saturday and Sunday, where you get some of the upsets first round, but then you start getting some really good high powered matchups in the second round. So those are my favorite rounds of the playoffs as well, that this weekend in the NFL and then that Saturday, Sunday in the NCAA tournament, because I think there are a lot of correlations between what happens from the wild card round to the divisional round and then first round, second round in the tournament. So we'll see if the underdogs can continue their hot streak, or if the rested teams and the teams that have been the best teams all year long kind of make a statement this weekend.
Let's get to one of those underdogs that you might like this weekend. Let's talk about the first game you're going to wager on here. Tampa Bay at Detroit. Detroit, 6.5-point favorite. Tampa Bay and Detroit this season are both 12-6 against the spread, tied for the league best record against the spread. Tampa Bay won and covered against the Eagles on Monday night, and Lions won, did not cover the three against the Rams on Sunday. Bear, where are we going here?
I know Tampa did not look great in the regular season against the Lions, but I like them here plus the points. I think with how well we saw Baker Mayfield play last week, I know that was against an Eagles team that was kind of just thrown in the towel. Mayfield did not play well that first, 19-37 and a pick. They weren't able to run the ball at all. Goff had a huge game. Amon-Ra St. Brown had a huge game. But I think the way the Bucks now have refound that the offense after last couple of games of the regular season weren't able to score an offensive touchdown. Here they are. Maybe that game against the Eagles helped get their confidence back and help get them on the right page. And I think on the flip side, I worry about Jared Goff in this spot against a Tampa defense, which shows a lot of looks, brings a lot of pressure from all over the place. I didn't fully trust him the other night. As someone who had Detroit money line in that game against the Rams, like I was concerned, and I probably that was a weird game because it felt like Detroit maybe should have been beating them easily, the Rams. And then at the end of the game, it was like maybe kind of felt like the Rams should have won the game. So it was a weird game. We'll see if the Lions defense can do better than they did against Stafford. And I mean, obviously there's no Stafford and Nacua here, but Lions defense, I think there's reason for concern. And I think on the flip side, I think there's concern with how Goff can handle Tampa, this defense second time around. So because of where we are on the podcast now, I took 6.5. There is a 7 at Circa available that isn't widely available. So that's why I can't say I'm taking 7 here because I can't play it at 7. But you want to hold out and wait, take the Bucks plus 7, maybe if it gets there. But if not, for this pod's purposes, I'll take Tampa plus the 6.5.
Do you think they win outright? Because I feel like if you take an underdog to cover in the playoffs, you should also expect them to maybe win outright. Do you expect them to win this game?
I give them a chance to win the game. I mean, if you go back and look at that, despite how bad Tampa played in that game, it was a 10-6 game late in the third quarter. So it wasn't like the Lions were really capitalizing on all these opportunities that they had with Tampa. So, like, I'll play Tampa plus the points, and I'll put a half a unit or so on Tampa on the money line as well. Yeah. Because that is usually a series that I like. That I like to subscribe to, I won't necessarily only play an underdog if I think they can win outright. But certainly, in a game like this where the number is kind of close-ish, if I'm taking a dog plus 6, 6.5, obviously I do think that they have a chance to win outright.
It's hard for me to back the Lions here because of their pass defense, right? 425 yards allowed last week. They were really good in the red zone. That's why the Rams didn't score enough points. But their red zone defense this year has not been very good. Baker Mayfield is not the best quarterback remaining, but he does get the ball in the hands of his weapons. Godwin, Mike Evans. We saw last weekend, it was Monday night now, that against a bad defense, Philly's not a good defense, the Baker Mayfield was able to take advantage of that. And this screams, even if you don't think they can win this game, I mean, backdoor cover, right? Lines up 14. The problem with that, though, is that is Todd Bowles going to go for two? The math says go for two, right? But I mean, even if they're down 10, right, driving late, like I trust them to get this over the end line. I have Mike Evans, by the way, over 60.5 receiving yards in this game. Just to throw that aside there. I just think that we saw last weekend his ability to get open, and he just dropped that one pass. Otherwise, he'd be over that number very easily. Let's get to game number two.
Yeah, you were right on with your wide receiver props last week. By the way, if Mecole Hardman could like find the ball in the air, that we would have cashed that one pretty easily too. Find the ball.
He was open twice for deep passes and did not. The ball was thrown perfectly both times. It just didn't look up in the didn't want to dive in that cold air. It is what it is. Let's move on to game number two. Bear, Green Bay Packers at San Francisco 49ers. Niners favored by 9.5 right now. Both teams this season were above 50% covering the spread. We know the Packers won last week is a big underdog. The Niners obviously on a bye hosting the Packers. Worth noting here, Bear, Niners at home with Shanahan in the playoffs, 4-0 straight up, 4-0 against the spread, which is interesting because Shanahan is a favorite typically, is not terribly good, but in the playoffs at home, given rest, the Niners have been a juggernaut. And I think I know where you're going with this one. I think you're back in the trend here with Shanahan and the Niners.
Yeah, I am. And not only back in the trend, I'm backing a team that's been the best team in the NFC all year long. And I think the rest, the last couple of weeks, the last weekend of the regular season where they had nothing to play for, and then the idle week in the NFL playoffs. We started last week, a couple of weeks off to kind of heal up some of those injuries. I would think McCaffrey would be good to go. I think Purdy, any lingering injuries that he had, he'll be healed up. So I think the rest will do them good. And I think they come out and remind people how good and how dominant they have been against the NFC this year. And look, this is not a, I don't think the Packers are good, or I think the Packers are overrated. I think it was a fluke. I think the Packers are a good team. But again, you were a 7-point underdog for a reason at Dallas. You won the game outright. Now you got to go on the road again and compete or potentially win as a bigger underdog against a better team than you beat last week, a more well-coached team than you faced last week. I just don't like the situation for Green Bay here at all. I think the Niners come out and I think they win the game very convincingly.
Well, we cover this game as we do all games extensively in the gambling group chat, Bear. It's going to be me and you and Will and a special guest. We have a special guest, Sammy P's back, everyone. Well, maybe back. We don't know. Is he back, Bear? We'll find out next. Gambling group chat.
Gambling group chat is back. Myself, Will Hill, Jeff. And as promised last week, we have a new addition to the gambling group. Coach Nick Saban, formerly of Alabama, has now joined the Bear Bets podcast, being that Sammy P ditched us last week. One and done. He's replaced. And Coach Saban has joined us to replace Sammy P. So we appreciate Coach Saban and explaining the process to us during NFL playoff time. Sammy P, appreciate all your hard work, but you have been replaced by the greatest college football coach of all time.
Well, I guess it makes sense. I don't really have much to add. I didn't know the team was going to have a cardboard cutout of Nick Saban ready to go. I'm blushing now.
Good.
My one note of defense is that if you think I wanted to go to a wedding with no NFL access in the middle of the playoffs, you are mistaken. It was one of those weddings where I was told we're going. So it didn't really matter. I didn't really have a say in it. And no American channels in the rooms in the Dominican Republic. There were more chances for me to watch adult films than there were to watch NFL games. So that's not really my cup of tea, but that's where we were that last weekend.
A couple of funny asides on that, and it has nothing to do with your menu, television selection in the room. I'm actually going to be in Turks and Caicos during the Super Bowl, and I was actually there during the Rams Bengals Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and they brought it in and the internet kept buffering, and like we were all like on delay. We missed like part of the final drive when the Rams ultimately went down and scored. It was a disaster, but yet we're going to Turks and Caicos again for Super Bowl weekend. And then I remember one of my good friends got married on Derby Day 2004. It would have been the year Smarty Jones won the Kentucky Derby. And I remember sitting in the back room prior to the ceremony, just all huddled around a TV watching the Derby. But anybody else have a good like sports and like general life story? Like people who get married during college football season on a Saturday, that's like someone you wouldn't even want to relate yourself with, right, Jeff?
There's no chance. I had a friend who actually got married in September and was like, "You're not coming." I was like, "Nope, you got it right. Thanks for the invite, but I will not be there. It's not gonna happen. It's my job. I mean, get married in spring, summer, winter. You just don't get married during the fall. It's pretty simple. I'm just not gonna be there. But I'm honest about it. I'm not gonna do it. So I did get married on the first day of the tampering period of free agency, and so that was quite a unique experience to get married. And then immediately find my agent and ask him, do I have a deal or not? Not even like, you know, during the reception, like immediately after the wedding, I found him in cocktail hour and was like, are we good? He's like, we're good. I was like, all right, cool. Let's celebrate for the party.
I can pay for the wedding.
She had no idea. I just basically agreed to a deal. Yeah, she had no idea. I just agreed to a deal essentially with the Giants on wedding night. So that's my one sports related wedding story.
Well, you got to have something.
I will say, though, the girls, like, I know girls like to have those fall weddings, the foliage, the background, the pictures, so that's a tough spot, but I agree. You can't interfere with the football. You have to be considerate of your guests. I mean, to have it during NFL playoffs, to have it during these big games, I mean, it's so inconsiderate. It's just a reason to lose a friendship over it, to be honest.
I have this, too, Bear. This is one of my favorite tweets of all time. I'm not sure if we could take this full. This is somebody watching a football game. That's the pew at mass. So the phone had turned sideways. And this wedding goer needed Kansas plus 9.5, but you can't really get much more degenerate than that in the pew at the church with the game on silent.
That's a person that I want.
It's a winner in my book.
Friend for life, for sure. That's one of our people for sure. And so we got two games this weekend, two games Saturday, two games Sunday, the two big favorites play on Saturday. And before we handicap each of the games, I guess the question, like, if one of these two big favorites were to lose, who do you think it might be, Sammy?
The two big favorites would lose probably Baltimore, given the weather and the wind. This is a perfect game for San Francisco and Green Bay. Everything is probably going to go right for the Niners. I get, and Jeff's going to talk about the numbers on Lamar. I don't want to steal his thunder. Lamar has not been great in this role. But when you think about, you know, a low of 20 degrees, winds from 15 to 20, that could affect both teams. And I know Houston wants to throw the football with C.J. Stroud. It's going to affect Houston. It's also going to affect Lamar. It affects these running teams that like to do pitches and stuff like that. So I would say because of the weather in Baltimore, the crab cake's going to be, again, 20 degrees is the low on Saturday. I think that throws a wrench in more games than there would be in San Francisco and Green Bay.
Jeff, make your case there then for Sammy alluded to it. Make your case there for Baltimore struggling.
I mean, Lamar just has to buck a lot of trends to cover this spread. I know we're talking about just outright winning, but he has not played as well. It's a small sample size in four playoff games. He completes about 10% less passes, less touchdowns, more interceptions. The offense doesn't score as many points. And then he just has not been good as a big favorite. 1-8, covering a spread of 7.5 points or more as a big favorite. Off 12 days rest, guys, 1-6 against the spread. I know these are against the spread numbers, but if this game becomes a touchdown game, a field goal game, they go in either direction, right? I mean, Baltimore to me feels like all the pressure's on them in this game. They're the one seed. They have the MVP. Here comes a young Texans team, rookie quarterback, rookie coach. They're a dome team going outside that typically has not fared well for dome teams. They have nothing to lose in this game, right? No matter what happens for Houston in this game, they know CJ Stroud is their guy for the future. And they hear they come to Baltimore. Lamar has not played well in these spots before. All the pressure on Baltimore in every single way in this game. On the other side, look, the Niners, I think, are just a juggernaut at home. They're healthy. The Packers back on the road again as a big underdog. I just don't think the Packers can withstand sort of what the Niners can do to them. I feel like the Texans can do that a little bit more. So to me, Baltimore would be the team who would get upset if we're asking me who to lose in this game.
And Will, if you look at that first, if you look at the first game of the year where the Ravens and Texans played, it was a really ugly game. Texans had 268 total yards, Ravens 265, ugly lot of penalties. It was C.J. Stroud's first regular season starts. You would expect him to have been improved by then. But it was a 7-6 game at halftime. So it wasn't like the Ravens actually just went out and dominated Houston the first time. So we'll see if the injuries that the Texans have, and obviously with the Ravens with some injuries as well, how that affects the game. And if the Ravens indeed are a little bit rusty, but a lot of times, don't you think some of these underdogs who win that wild card game, maybe they get a little overvalued in the second round, maybe in both the case of both the Texans and the Packers here?
I do. I think it's so easy to fall victim to recency bias because the Ravens didn't play last weekend. The 49ers didn't play. We all sat there and watched. It was the only game on. We watched the Texans win by a million points. We watched the Packers with a huge upset, especially if you bet on those teams. You get the positive reinforcement. Hey, I bet on them. They won. I get to bet on them again, and I'm getting a whole bunch of points. Growing up, like, in the 90s, mid-90s, these divisional games were always bloodbaths. The Cowboys, the 49ers, the Packers, they were dominant teams. Nobody could put a glove on them. Recently, with more parity, it hasn't been as much of a trend, but I just think that Jeff mentioned it. You got a dome team from Houston going outdoors, a Baltimore team that's rested, that's hungry. I think you could probably throw that first game of the season out the window because that was Lamar and Baltimore offense adjusting to a new system. That was Stroud's first game. I just think Baltimore gets a lead. They pull away. Could Houston backdoor them at 9.5? Sure, absolutely. But I think Baltimore will be in control here. I'd be shocked if Baltimore lost this game. This would be a terrible loss for them. Harbaugh's typically been good off a bye. I think people have also gotten carried away, or they did get carried away with Flacco and the Browns. That's still 38-year-old Joe Flacco was out of the league for a long time. He had a couple of nice games, and it was, wow, this Browns team is great. He was awful last week. So I don't know. When you go through the Texans schedule, who they've really played, who they've really beat, have they really been tested on defense? I saw a stat. I think it was DVOA. They are second to worst in the league in terms of missed tackles. So I think Washington led the league with the most missed tackles. Houston was second with 130 missed tackles. If you can't tackle against Baltimore, you're in for a long day. That crowd will be going crazy. I tend to think Baltimore rolls here.
We do, though. We fall for these underdogs, yes, especially the Cinderellas. This happens in March Madness all the time. When a team, like, let's go back to last year in March, when Princeton beats Arizona. Princeton's the 15 against the 2. Beat Arizona. Everybody that didn't bet Princeton in the beginning is now betting Princeton against Creighton, and they're taking them from 9 down to 9.5, down to 9, 8.5, 8, and then Creighton covers all the numbers against Princeton. The Packers side to me, when you talk to guys in Vegas and you call the Superbook and they go, yeah, 8 of every 10 money line bets are on Green Bay. That's a problem. And those are usually the teams, Bear, that you don't want to be on. The Packers are going to be the side that everybody wants to bet. And it's ironic because everybody bet the Cowboys last week. So there are going to be a lot of people watching this show. They're thinking, well, Cowboys were a 7-point favorite, got drilled by the Packers, and now the Packers are getting 9.5. What am I missing? Well, you're missing the fact that the power rating and the true numbers of the gambling science have this game literally San Francisco 12 or 13. Like, that's my number right now. I'm 12.5. San Fran is 12.5 points better than Green Bay. If this game is played 100 times, the number probably lands between 12 and 13 in the power rating. You can't overreact to one random football game.
And remember, I forget what the number in the Vikings Giants game was. Remember the Giants went to Minnesota and beat the Vikings, and then the Giants, they might have a shot against the Eagles, and the Eagles went out and annihilated the Giants. And if you go back. Our research department looked this up for us. You go back since the wild card format, it began in 78. Underdogs of 7 or more points that win in that wild card round, second round, 2-9, straight up 4-7 ATS. So to Sammy's point, only two of them have won that second game in the divisional round. One was the 87 Vikings against the 49ers, and the other were the 96 Jaguars against the Broncos. So typically it is one and done. We'll see if either of them can pull another upset in either of those games. Is there something other than the side or total that you guys like, a prop or a derivative or something?
My favorite bet of the weekend is San Francisco team total over. You can shop around and pick your juice. Basically, there's 28.5 minus 135, 29.5 minus 120 or so. I think I took it over 29.5. Basically, my bet is San Francisco is going to score 30 plus. I can't see a scenario here where San Francisco doesn't get their points. This is still a Green Bay team. They gave up 30 points to the Carolina Panthers. They couldn't hold the lead against Tommy DeVito. If you look at some of the quarterbacks they played, it's Jaren Hall on Sunday night. It's Brett Rippon versus the Rams. They have really middling stats on defense. And they didn't play. If you look at the Green Bay during the regular season, they didn't play the Cowboys, the Ravens, the 49ers, the Bills, the Dolphins. They played a very soft schedule. They are not a good defensive team. You get San Francisco healthy, rested, Shanahan time to prepare. To me, San Francisco is going to score in the 30s. I wouldn't even be shocked if they hit 40. I think San Francisco is basically going to score every time they touch the ball. Just keep this in mind. I don't know if it's something that's going to trigger a bet for me, but keep this in mind. LaFleur has been electing to receive recently. So Green Bay to score first, Green Bay first quarter. I don't like them in the game, so I don't know if I'll take that. But most of these teams decide to kick off and defer. Green Bay, last week they took the ball. On Thanksgiving, they took the ball. They went right down and scored. So keep that in mind when you look at some of those props. Green Bay has been electing to receive.
It could be a little rainy there, and I'm looking at the weather forecast for Santa Clara Saturday. Winds 10 to 15, 60-70% chance of rain. So I don't know if that's bad enough to affect anything in that game. That field area traditionally has had some problems. So we'll see. Sammy, was there anything in either of those Saturday games that you liked that we may have missed?
Yeah, he was talking about team total. I was looking first half total, so I need both teams to sort of tango and float over 24.5. I think this is very possible. San Fran gets 3 touchdowns in the first half, and then you need the Packers to score once, like a 21-7. 17-10 type first half. I mean, we know San Francisco is going to come out guns blazing, and Shanahan and LaFleur are both very good with the script, right? Those first few drives, those first couple quarters, we saw that Detroit and Rams game. I mean, it was bang, 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 bang first half, and then the second half turned into a crawl because the teams made adjustments. And I do think LaFleur and Shanahan will figure things out in the second half, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But early, we should get touchdowns. You know, over 24 and a half to me, it sort of bleeds into what Will said. I think San Francisco is going to name its score, but I like it more first half, and I like it with the two teams involved at 24 and a half.
I'll get to my best bet later. Will just took my whole best bet. Thanks, buddy. That's a good argument for Niners team total over. I love that one. The other one I like, guys, is Aaron Jones over 16 and a half rush attempts. He's been over 24 straight games. Is what the Packers have sort of leaned on down the stretch. But also the one vulnerable spot for the Niners is their run defense. It's 26th in EPA. I feel like if the Packers are going to try to keep this game close, even if the Niners do score, I think we all agree they're going to score a bunch of points, they got to stick to what they do well. What they've done well lately, run the football, play action pass, move the pocket, and that's the one vulnerable spot for the Niners defense. So I think Aaron Jones is going to have to get the ball a lot for the Packers to keep this game relatively close early on. So I like Jones here over 16.5 rushes.
As I mentioned earlier in the show, I do like the Niners here minus the 9.5 as well. First game, I'll see, and we'll see if we.
I will say this. I like San Francisco too. I would lay it before I took it. My team total over is my favorite play. San Francisco had three of like the five best performances this year. They destroyed Dallas on Sunday night. They buried Philly in Philly. They buried Jacksonville in Jacksonville. Those were all extremely impressive results. Those all don't quite look as good right now with the Cowboys losing, the Jags falling apart, the Eagles falling apart. So just something to keep in mind.
But does that maybe indicate how much head and shoulders the Niners are in the NFC above those other teams?
Yeah, it's the Michigan argument. Well, Michigan didn't beat anybody, and then Michigan beat the shit out of Washington. Like, we can't, you know, sometimes we get lost in, like, trying
say
to
that
not.
Say that again, Sammy.
Michigan beat the say shit again. Out of Washington.
Yeah.
But leading up to the game, Michigan didn't play anybody. And, like, sometimes it doesn't matter. Like, you can only beat who you beat. You can only play who you play. Obviously, to Will's point, the loss against Baltimore, that was sort of head-scratching on Christmas. But you throw that result out, it's been dominance for most of the season. Since they got healthy off the bye, San Francisco has rolled almost everybody. And I know that those teams maybe aren't as good as we once thought, but they pounded most of those teams, pounded them.
Jeff, how many starters on the offensive side of the ball does Washington have coming back next year?
At the current number, zero. Zero. Okay. And they lost
they did hire a good coach.
I like Jed Fish, but again, they literally have zero guys on offense right now returning. They have zero scholarship quarterbacks right now. They lost everyone. Everyone's gone. And guess what? Kalen DeBoer in Alabama, that whole roster has left too. So that's the new world we're in now. You know, if you have a new coach, man, teams are calling, giving you some NIL money, and you're bouncing.
Do you actually have the paper depth chart with you, the one that you highlighted and X'd and everything? Is that you carry that around? Can you update it?
It's in my favorites on my phone. It's right here. Here you go. Yep. I need to cross more out though. I haven't crossed out the center or both right guards. So I haven't crossed out Jeremy Bernard yet. I haven't crossed out the backup quarterback yet. I mean, this is the offense. I just crossed the whole thing out. It's gutted. You can't see it, but it's gutted. I'll tweet out again for you guys later. Don't worry.
Please do. I need to stay abreast as to what's going on with the Washington program. I do know a pal, the defensive back actually, it's going to go to Miami. We can hopefully help the Canes out. Canes need a help with that secondary as well. But to come back all the way back around to what we were talking about, and Sammy, I think, hit it best. I remember in 2013, it would have been with Florida State when people were like, oh, who's Florida State beating? The ACC is to quote Big Cat, like booty ass or booty cheeks or whatever category the computer already spit out. But I'm like, all right, it doesn't matter. They're beating the crap out of everybody. They're really, really good. Like, there's a difference between, like, schedule doesn't necessarily make how good a particular team is. So I agree with Sammy. I think these Niners are head and shoulders. I have them plus 110, plus minus 125. I bet them again last weekend to win the NFC, because at the very least, if I want to, as long as they win this week, I can buy some back in the NFC Championship game on the dog if I want to. So who will their potential opponents be? We got the two games on Sunday now, Tampa at Detroit. Detroit 6.5, 48.5, and the one that we're all waiting for on Sunday night, Buffalo 2.5, 45.5 over the Chiefs. And Jeff, I'm excited for you. You're going to the Buffalo Kansas City game. I hope people out there lead you to some great wings. Bills Mafia will hopefully will have you doing the playing beer pong, and I want you jumping off the roof of a truck or a car right onto the beer pong table. And I want to see some videos of that on Saturday, and hopefully you'll survive and actually get to see a pretty good game, and a game that right now, I know this is a betting podcast and you're looking for advice, but I don't know if I want any part of this game. The Bills' injuries worry me. Same time, can the Chiefs kind of expose some of the injuries they have at linebacker? Continually bogged down in the red zone, kicking those short field goals last week against the Dolphins. Like, yeah. there are plenty of concerns on both sides here. Yet I could see both teams. I can make a case for either team to win, Jeff. So you have any thoughts on the game that you're going to be going to?
I'll be cold. I know that for certain. I am looking for tailgate. Hit me up, anyone with any tailgates. I'll gladly show up. Look, this game is the Bills Super Bowl, right? They've been waiting for this game for years now to host the Kansas City Chiefs in their place. They're a two seed. They're looked upon as a favorite to get to the Super Bowl. We know what their power ranking is. Sammy's talked about it for weeks now, despite their record of how good their team actually is. Now, the injuries to bear a real concern. They have no linebackers and no secondary players left. But can the Chiefs catch the football, right? I mean, that's been a problem for them all season long, no matter who they play. I thought offensively, though, against the Dolphins, they looked really good. They just continue to have those errors, right? The block in the back, a drop pass, the sort of derailed drives. You can't do that in Buffalo. But I think Travis Kelce over receptions, and I think Isaac Pacheco over rushing yards, to me are plays to make a Kansas City because of the linebacker issues in Buffalo. The last time the Chiefs played in Buffalo, it was 2020. So it wasn't recent per se, but they ran the ball for 265 yards. Like, they went in there and said, we're going to run the football and take the crowd out of it. And I feel like in this game, they're going to do the exact same thing. Let's run the football, establish the line of scrimmage, and just take it to Buffalo. So that's why I like those wagers. I don't think we see Kelce drop three passes again, but this game will be a lot of fun, man. And the pressure's all in Buffalo in this spot where they haven't been this, kind of had this pressure in a long time.
To me, it's an under game. I think we've talked about it all year. I wish I'd bet it accordingly more, because the Chiefs have just been an ATM if you just bet their unders. There's this perception that it's Mahomes, it's Allen. I think a lot of people think, oh, it's going to be 31-28 back and forth, that overtime game 2 years ago, which was the same round, same time slot 2 years ago. It's a little deja vu for the Bills. That was 42-36. These are not those type of teams anymore. The Bills run the ball a lot. The Chiefs don't have a lot of weapons, but they're better on defense. To me, this is more like a 23-20 type of game. I don't love the side either. I would lean towards the Chiefs just because it's Mahomes. I'm getting points. Bills are beat up. Plus, you get extra rest with the Chiefs. Chiefs played on Saturday. Bills had to play Monday late afternoon. And remember, the Chiefs basically had a bye week 18. They got to sit all of their important players. So should be a fun game. Mentioning the game 2 years ago reminded me of something. I wish I brought this up last week. There are new overtime rules. So just keep that in mind for live betting. Once you go to overtime, if you score a touchdown first, the other team gets a chance to match. So maybe you play defense first. Maybe if you do give up the touchdown, you go for two. So +1, +2.5, +1.5, those numbers are more valuable because a game could land on one. Just keep that in mind. Would be a little bit ironic if, that this was the reason they changed the overtime rules, was Chiefs Bills a couple years ago, pretty much. It would be ironic if this goes to overtime again, which is not impossible. I think I saw 11-12-1 for this game to go to overtime. So keep that in mind with the rules for live betting, all those types of things. A derivative, I like Mahomes. I didn't see the number, but I'm sure his over rushing yards is something I'll play. He just goes back to pass. He has nobody open. His only option is to run. So should be a fun game. This is the best rivalry in the NFL. I mean, it was Seahawks 49ers for a bit. It was Steelers Ravens for a while. It was Manning versus Brady. We don't really have that one now. This is it. Mahomes, Allen. This should be a lot of fun. If the Bills can't get him this year with this version of the Chiefs in Buffalo, you start to wonder if you're ever going to beat them.
not only have five of the last six Chief games gone under, Kansas City is the best under team in the NFL this season. Crazy to think that, yes, given the Mahomes and Kelsey and Reed. This team is winning with defense. I made the total 40. It's 45 and a half, so tend to agree with Will there. And look, I have to bring this part up because nobody else is going to bring it up. We all have our Bills futures for the most part. I've got Bills AFC Super Bowl. Will had it a week before. He bet it before the Kansas City game. Is there a world? I don't have a tinfoil hat, but is there a world where the NFL has more to gain by the Chiefs going back to the Super Bowl? Can we all have, I mean, the Swifties, the ratings? No?
Uh-oh.
Can no? Dude,
a buff, dude, Sammy, a Buffalo-Detroit Super Bowl would do wonders for the National Football League.
More than Mahomes and Kelsey? Have
been there before. If you're taking the Taylor Swift into consideration, maybe because of that, but like, From a storyline perspective and fans showing up to Vegas and the numbers, I think a Buffalo Detroit would do. Kansas City is not a major market. People tune in because of Mahomes. I guess if Taylor Swift is going to be there, people watch anyways. I don't think they're going to rig the game for the Chiefs, man. Buffalo, their story would do better, in my opinion, than Kansas City being back.
We went over this earlier in the year. She's going to be in Japan. She's got shows in Japan.
Yes.
Super Bowl weekend. So it's not.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, she does. Yeah.
Going to be there. You call yourself Swifties? I'm the one looking at the concert schedule back in October when we brought this up. Maybe she could like fly there and back her, but it might be tough. I'm trying to shoot some holes in your conspiracy theory there, Sammy.
I didn't say they would rig the game either. I'm just saying like it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Kansas City got back to the Super Bowl. And let's also not act like Taylor Swift cares about the environment. She's been flying all over the world.
You don't think she's flying like 38F in the back of like a JAL from to LAX? you don't think that'll be the flight route? You think that she might have some more comfortable accommodations for a flight like that? But I get it. It is
in private good plane fun. G5 all the way.
Exactly. When we travel the Schwartz way, G5 private.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's waiting out here at Teterboro. I'll be there in a few minutes, guys. Don't worry.
Perfect. Our first game, Tampa-Detroit. I actually like Tampa plus the 6.5. I think that Bulls defense, I think they can give Goff problems. I think he's someone who every time he drops back to pass, I don't fully trust him. I think he can really confuse. I think Bowles in that defense can really confuse Goff and make his life miserable. Yes, the Detroit can run the ball a little bit better, but I don't fully trust Jared Goff in this spot. And at the same time, you look at what that Tampa offense did to Phil. Look, I know the Eagles defense has been one of the worst in the league lately, but they could have. I mean, Evans was wide open on a couple of plays, a couple of drops, and they potentially could have had even more points on the board than they did. So now they got to go on the road. But this Tampa story, I think, is real. And Baker looked okay last week. He looked healthy. And again, I hate being on the underdog that won the previous week. But it was only a field goal, and it kind of felt like Tampa was the right side all week going into that game against a dead team walking Philly. So yeah, I'm gonna hop on board here, and I took the Bucks plus 6.5. Is the one underdog I really can get behind this week with a lot of confidence. So, Will, any thoughts on Tampa-Detroit? You hate the Bucks. You like the Bucks. What do you think?
I'll take you on head-to-head here. I'll take the Lions. I can't bet a team. I know it's 6.5. I just don't give Tampa. I can't see them winning this game, and I don't want to take like under a touchdown with a team that I'd just be shocked if they won. I go back to week 6, and I know it was a long time ago, but Tampa did nothing on offense. 6 points. 2 of 13 on third down. They only had 13 first downs. Now you're going to switch venues. That is going to be a crazy crowd Sunday afternoon. Detroit can at least stop the run or rush the passer. Detroit winning this game by a touchdown doesn't seem unreasonable to me. I think Detroit's the better team. Look, I've always felt like the division round is sort of where Cinderella goes to die. If Detroit wins this game and they don't cover, I guess I'll live with it. But I think Detroit's marching on here to the Final Four. Detroit in the NFC title game. What a world this has become. And it's kind of fun here. This is just such a random matchup. Tampa was such a long shot to even win this division, a bad division at that. We get an old NFC North rematch, an NFC Central rematch. These teams used to be in the same division. But I think Detroit wins. I think they cover. I don't love being on like all the favorites here, but I just have a hard time seeing Tampa win this game.
Square Willie.
Yes.
The Rams did put 425 yards of offense down the Lions' throat. That's alarming to think about the fact that Detroit was maybe a little lucky to win that game, all things considered. But they did win. It was awesome to watch the Lions fans celebrate. I was happy for the fans. Don't really care about the team. But let's talk about this. Do we get more seven in the market? It's 6.5 at most places, but if you're in a circus state, if you're in Nevada, Illinois, Iowa, but Colorado, you can take 7 with the Bucks.
And I'd love to be able to do that.
That full 7 is a big deal. So I haven't made a bet yet. I said on Chicken Dinner this week I was going to wait for 7. We might get there, guys. We might get. I mean, we taped this on a Thursday. By the time we get to Saturday and Sunday, there's a chance we get to 7. I mean, if Circa's at 7, there's a chance we get DraftKings, FanDuel, MGM, the 7. So I think if you like the favorite, lay it right now, lay 6.5. And if you like Tampa, you might just want to wait for a full 7.
I rarely advocate for a full game over, but how do we not get a lot of points in this game? We have two really bad pass defenses, right? The Bucs saw the second most yards in the NFL to players in the slot, where the Lions do really well. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam LaPorta, nice coming back off that injury, obviously, was a little bit slow in the game against the Rams. On the flip side, Detroit, Sammy mentioned it, 425 yards last weekend. They played really well in the red zone. They forced a lot of field goals. The Lions do not have a particularly great red zone defense. And they've had 4 straight games. They've allowed 140 yards plus to a single wide receiver. Justin Jefferson, Puka Nacua. I think Mike Evans has a big game. He would have been over his number easily if he caught that one deep pass early in the game against Philly. And to me, this is just a high-scoring, up-tempo game. A lot of wide receiver yards, a lot of quarterback yards. It's inside. The weather's good. Baker and Tampa Bay aren't going to be intimidated by kind of the environment. Also, you mentioned it, Bear. Tampa Bay brings a lot of pressure, right? They're going to pressure Goff. Well, also, on the flip side of that is, if they don't get home, there's one-on-one coverage against all these Lions skill players. Like, there's an opportunity for big plays to be made for the Lions. So, to me, I see a lot of points this game. I would actually advocate for the over, which is pretty rare for me to take.
I would agree with that. I mean, in the indoor environment, and if you do get a scenario where, the Lions do get those matchups and capitalize, and they do get up. This is going to be, I think this could be one of those in-game betting fests as well, where you can maybe like live bet Baker Mayfield over attempts or Jared Goff over attempts and things like that, depending on how the score gets. And I know, Will, you're always paying attention to those things and keeping us abreast on some of those derivatives. Is there anything else in that, in either of these games on Sunday that caught your eye?
No, I think we covered it, but it's funny. You know, we sit here and we analyze these games from top to bottom. We look at everything. If you look at last week, there were, 6 games? So 6 teams won. The Chiefs fumbled with them, like a minute left, up 20 points, running out the clock. That was the only turnover any of the 6 winning teams had. So sometimes it's that simple as, hey, who's going to turn the ball over? That's who wins. I mean, we don't know who's going to turn it over, but I thought that was an interesting stat. 1 turnover between the 6 winning teams, and it was in just total garbage time.
Well, we've had some turnover in the in the coaching carousel here. Mike McCarthy staying in Dallas, and now as of this recording right now, it appears Arthur Blank is hell bent on hiring Bill Belichick, which I think that's an obvious upgrade on the Falcons head coaching position, if indeed they are able to close that deal. But what else has to happen, Jeff? I'll start with you to make this work. Like, you don't have a quarterback on the roster. Like, we kind of talked about it earlier in the year. Like, is this a spot where maybe would like a Bill Belichick, Russell Wilson, 1-year marriage, would that be something that would work?
No chance. I mean, no chance. Zero chance. Look, when Bill Belichick has had Josh McDaniels as his offensive coordinator, which I would imagine he'd bring him with him, they've been good on offense, right? Even the Mac Jones year, they made the playoffs with this setup. So to me, it's maybe draft a quarterback. You know, you've spent now first round draft picks, top 10 draft picks, 3 straight years in offensive weapons. Those guys are there. Your offensive line is there. You got to get a quarterback. It's not Russell Wilson. It's probably not Kirk Cousins. It's probably go the draft, get a young guy, work with Josh McDaniels, work with Belichick, and grow this thing moving forward. The one thing I will keep saying this, guys, wherever Bill Belichick goes, he cannot be in charge of choosing players on offense. Defensively, fine. He's drafted well on defense, but you cannot let him choose the quarterback. You can't let him choose any of the skill position players. Let someone else do that. Let him coach the team, the defense. Let McDaniels coach the offense. It can work in that way. Russell Wilson couldn't do Sean Payton. Can you imagine Bill Belichick? So that's not happening. I don't think Cousins is going there. It's draft a quarterback who's ever sort of there in that range. Bo Nix, maybe
they pick at 8.
JJ McCarthy. I doubt JJ McCarthy fits there. I mean, Michael Penix probably too early at 8. Maybe a trade up and get someone. But to me, it's young quarterback, and that's the way to go if you're Belichick there in Atlanta.
And it would then appear that Harbaugh potentially to the Chargers would work with this team out there, for Vrabel to Seattle, which would be a good idea. Titans, I haven't heard much on that position. And were you guys surprised that McCarthy was kept by Jerry Jones? Because it's a little weird, because for all the I don't want to say criticism or what it may be, a criticism, or as much as Jerry Jones has talked about, he doesn't pull the trigger on firing coaches very often. Do you think what we were all maybe in a little bit of a prisoner of the moment type deal, just with how poorly the Cowboys season ended, and just us kind of being like aware of some of the bonehead decisions and play calling and clock management that McCarthy did? Or was there, is this a mistake, Sammy, do you think, to keep McCarthy? I mean, if you have a Belichick, a Harbaugh, a Vrabel, like, you've got some pretty good coaching candidates out there, and to keep Mike McCarthy, to disagree with Greg Olson, I don't think anybody was running through a wall or running over people to hire Mike McCarthy if he got fired. Like, I don't know. It feels a little prisoner of the moment to say fire him, but at the same time, I think kind of you know what he is.
This was the best team they've had, though, with Dak Prescott. You have the 2 seed. You fought all season for that 2 seed. You're going to be at home until the NFC Championship, and you get 50 points pretty much in your eye. That's bad, and that's coaching, right? It was a lack of a game plan defensively. Dan Quinn, I think to me it was more baffling they got shredded on defense than them to come out and like not score. I mean, they did get points, but I think there's a fundamental issue there in Dallas. That's a team that, I don't want to use the term front runner, but they have a lot of guys in that locker room that like to play from ahead and don't have the adversity to play from behind. We've seen this a lot. And I mean, when was the last time the Cowboys won an NFC championship game? The mid-90s?
Yep.
You got to go way back.
95.
Way back to the last time this team contended for a Super Bowl. And I don't know. I mean, that was a puzzling retainment of McCarthy. I would have gotten rid of him. I'm not a GM or an owner, though, so what do I know? I still think, though, like, the craziest situation is there's a world where Chicago is going to draft the rookie quarterback and take Caleb Williams, and they're going to keep the little rascal all grown up, Matt Eberflus, to coach Fields. And Caleb Williams. And then if the team doesn't do well under Caleb, they're going to fire Eberflus and give him 2 head coaches in 2 years. Chicago's been doing the same thing for a decade now. They draft a young quarterback with an incumbent coach and an incumbent coordinator, and then it doesn't work. They fire the coach and coordinator and then give this young quarterback a new coach and a new coordinator. Now, they did fire the OC, Luke Getsy. So they're going to bring in a new coordinator with an incumbent coach. But if the coach doesn't do well next year with the rookie quarterback, they're going to fire the coach and keep the coordinator. Like, what the hell is going on in Chicago? That, to me, that's the most puzzling decision. Fire the coordinator, keep the coach, and then maybe take a rookie quarterback.
Will?
No, I mean, I know that Jones has a history of keeping these coaches longer than he should. I mean, Garrett was there forever. Garrett was there like a decade, and it was like every year. Is this going to be the year? Is this going to be the year? So I know he has a history of holding on to these guys too long, and he likes to be the star of the show. Jerry Jones does. Even that being said, I thought Sunday was enough to do it. I thought they were going to fire him. Maybe they reached out to Belichick. Maybe they reached out to Harbaugh before they got rid of McCarthy and said, hey, would you be interested? They got feedback that, no, this isn't going to work, whatever. And they said, you know what? We can't get Harbaugh. We can't get Belichick. Maybe we'll just stick with him. It would have been fascinating to hear, you know, be a fly on the wall these last few days between what's going on in Philly, what's going on in Dallas, Belichick, to hear these little inner workings of like, hey, let's not get rid of him until we have a guy. But that being said, I am surprised they kept him. I would have moved on.
We'll mention the number one point I have. Sorry, Barrett. What's that? We'll mention the point that I think is lost when you fire a coach, okay? It's who are you going to hire that's better, right? So if you fire McCarthy, who on the market right now is going to take that job and be a better coach? With that job comes Jerry Jones. With that job comes Stephen Jones right now. Their director of player personnel is great, and he has more influence now, Will does, as far as choosing players. And they've been fine choosing players, but you still get Jerry Jones meddling in everything you do. And so that job requires a certain type of coach. So if you fire McCarthy, who is better for that job? If Belichick, to your point, Will, said no, if Harbaugh said no, I'm not sure I can name someone right now who'd be better for that job, who wants that job, right? And secondly, when you have a head coach who has a side of the ball, Mike McCarthy does the offense, and that side is good, that coach gets another couple of years, right? If you're Brandon Staley and you're a defense coach and your defense stinks, you're out of there, right? If you're Nick Sirianni and you do nothing but except scream at Chiefs fans after you win, you're probably out of there, right? Like, McCarthy buys himself time because his offense is good and he's an offensive coach. If his offense was bad, I promise you he'd be out of there. So I think that those are the reasons why it makes a little bit of sense to keep McCarthy. If you fire him, who are you hiring? Is Vrabel that much better than McCarthy? I don't know. McCarthy wins a lot of football games. You're not getting Ben Johnson. So that, I think, is the point that Will's making, is that, like, if you fire him, who are you hiring? I don't have a great answer for that.
You mentioned Sirianni. What do you think happens in Philly, Jeff? Because, it could be, just the way the season ended and the absolute collapse is certainly alarming. And you mentioned that he really doesn't handle the offense. He doesn't handle the defense. He delegates, and the coordinator they brought in on defense was terrible. The midseason move didn't work. But at the same time, they didn't nearly win the Super Bowl last year, and the year before they got to the playoffs. Yeah. But on the flip side, you talk, it's like kind of like the opposite of what you were saying about Jerry Jones, and like not really rushing to make a change. This is a team that got rid of Peterson, a year or two removed from winning the Super Bowl. Yeah. They fired Chip after a couple of 10-6 seasons. Yeah. So it's like, this is kind of like Philly Northeast knee-jerk reaction. Do you think Sirianni survives this?
And they also fired Andy Reid after one bad season too, right? Now, he'd been there forever and his time was sort of up in Philly. Look, the Sirianni thing is really interesting, right? Because you can make the case that, he just needs new coordinators because Gannon left, and the Eagles fans mock Gannon. I think they miss him as Matt Patricia was calling plays at the end of the season. And then obviously Shane Steichen left. And you can make the case, I think, if you're Sirianni, like, hey, look, I just hired the wrong coaches. I really promoted from within was what he did. So let's go out and hire new OC, new DC, and let's run it back. But guys, the Eagles roster right now, Kelce, I think he will retire, even though it's not, he said yesterday that he has not announced it yet. I think he will eventually retire. Lane Johnson's getting a year older, right tackle. You're probably losing Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham. Like, your secondary needs a lot of work. You have a lot of holes on your roster now, kind of sort of piling up. So you're asking Sirianni now to obviously replace those players plus hire new coordinators. It's a big upheaval in Philly, but that's how he keeps his job, is saying, I'll hire new coordinators and we'll run it back. I made the playoffs 3 years in a row now, was in the Super Bowl. I can do this. Let me hire some different coaches.
And the problem is, too, financially, they just paid Jalen Hurts, $255 million? And we all know, because we've covered this league for a long time, when you give the quarterback the bag, it's tougher to keep everybody else. I mean, look at Kansas City right now.
Yeah.
Kansas City can't afford any receivers because they have all this money tied into the quarterback, and the tight end makes a lot of money. So obviously it's easier to win in the NFL when you have a quarterback on a rookie deal. Jalen Hurts is making, what, $50 million a year right now. So it's going to be tougher for them to bring in and pay better players because they've paid the quarterback. So it's crazy to me. You're a player two away from winning the Super Bowl. And now the next year we're talking about what are the fundamental flaws in Philly. And it's a fair conversation. That thing has come undone, and it's not going to be easy to sew it back together.
Yeah, I think we'll hang on. I think if you just read the reports, they're having meetings, coming up with plans to replace the coordinators, get this back on track. I understand how bad it looked the last 6 weeks, but like Bear said, they made the playoffs, then they almost won a Super Bowl, then they were 10-1 before things fell apart. It'll be a little harsh to let him go. I think he'll hang on. Maybe he goes into the next year. Hey, if you start 2-4, you're going to be in some trouble. But I would think he's the coach next year, week one at least.
Sammy mentioned it earlier. Bears take Caleb Williams. We think that's done. We think that's a lock. I mean, we're sitting here, what, 4 months out from the draft, 3 months out from the draft. We think Caleb at that minus what, 800, 850 or whatever it is to go number one. We think that's the way the Bears go, Jeff.
They would be wise to take Caleb Williams. We mentioned this before, like, and look, Sammy talks about the Bears. Obviously he knows that team well. They do things sometimes that don't make sense. But if you keep Justin Fields, you have to pay Justin Fields. We just talked about how hard it is to build a roster with a good quarterback in Jalen Hurts. Imagine trying to build a roster with a bad quarterback. He can't pass the football consistently well when you're paying him $40 million a year. So like that's the thing. If you decide to keep Justin Fields, you're deciding to pay Justin Fields. Otherwise, what's the point of having him there one more season? So, yeah. Sammy, I think they draft Caleb Williams. I'm not certain, but I wouldn't put it past them to not do it.
But you think that they'll take Williams and not Drake May or Jaden Daniels or one of the other? It's Williams. Okay.
They traded out of one last year. They trade out of one last year to take a generational quarterback the next year. So now you have a generational quarterback on your doorstep. It's so obvious what they should do. But let's go back to a conversation we had like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I said, look, my big fear is that they are falling for Fields. And we saw the reports about the locker room loves Justin Fields. And if he only had more help. And I get it. Justin Fields is a lot better with Marvin Harrison Jr. and a left tackle in the future. But as we just talked about in Philly, when you give the quarterback the bag, it becomes harder to build a contender. So what they should do is draft the rookie quarterback. At the end of the day, though, Will, it's the Bears. And the Bears are the Bears because they constantly do dumb stuff.
What number would you guys need on May for May to be the first pick? Is there a price? Because I would expect like Caleb Williams is the rightful favorite, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's May. I don't know, Bear. Is there a number in mind where like, hey, at this price, I would bet May to be the first pick overall?
I got May at 550 back earlier in the year. And
would you still bet it? Like now, do you regret that bet? Because I bet the same thing. I don't feel like I have a great bet, but that's around in the ballpark where I'm like, it's worth a shot at that number, I guess.
I don't regret it because you guys know how these pre-draft conversations change and, the interview didn't go well or look at this pro day or something, this market will change dramatically, I think, at least from a PR standpoint over the next couple of months. So do I ultimately think May will go number one? No, but I don't hate myself for making that bet. So
if the Bears take another white quarterback from North Carolina that doesn't pan out, I don't know, guys. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Bear, you mentioned something like I don't have any money on this, and obviously I'm not taking Williams minus 800. But I think there's a point where the number comes crashing down because of the combine, because of stuff gets leaked out. Like this number to me is not going to stay at 800. There's going to be a period of time where everyone convinces themselves that Drake May is that guy. Maybe it's a great pro day or a great combine or he interviews well and someone leaks out. The Bears are thinking about taking Drake May or someone's training up for Drake May. At some point, you should get a better number on Caleb Williams. So if you like him to go number one, I just wait this thing out because right now, obviously, minus 800, you can't advise anyone to take that.
I would agree. You know what? I think we're going to stick. I think we're going to keep Sammy. I think he redeemed himself today. I think Coach Saban is fired. Sammy is back. So appreciate you guys. Hopefully you have a great wild card. That's not wild card. Nick, gone. Saban fired. Go to the game day set, like I'm sure you're probably going to be doing in
the year. Hey, Bear, can I make one more quick point? Okay, I wanted to say, can we take Saban down for one more second?
Yeah.
The Super Bowl MVP market is very fascinating right now because three of the top five contenders are AFC quarterbacks. And as we know, only one can make it. Two of them are going to cannibalize each other this weekend when Mahomes and Allen get together. You can only have one AFC quarterback. Christian McCaffrey is as high as 8-1 right now to win the MVP. They are a 10-point favorite against Green Bay. They'll be a 7-point favorite against Detroit. They're probably going to the Super Bowl, at which point McCaffrey might be 3-1. I don't think it's the worst idea to entertain some McCaffrey 8-1 right now because the Niners are likely going to the Super Bowl. And again, two of those dominoes are going to fall in the AFC.
And it's interesting because if you think back and assume, and again, you know what they say about assume, if you think they're going to play the Ravens in a rematch, we saw Christian McCaffrey have a pretty good first half in that game, like until the turnovers just put the 49ers in a position where they couldn't really run McCaffrey anymore. So, yeah, I don't hate that. Those markets like that, I don't dive into them as much, but I certainly see your point there at that number. That could be a play worth making. Did Jeff and Will, before we go, did you either of you look at that market? Was there anything out there that you saw that might be attractive?
I'm looking this up because I don't want to give a wrong trivia question, but when is the last running back to win Super Bowl MVP? I think I know the answer. I just want to be double sure, double check.
Was it Timmy Smith?
Is it Terrell Davis?
I think that's it. That's what it says here on Google too. So McCaffrey's different because he catches the ball. He runs the ball. But it is just sort of crazy to think about. I mean, it's been, 25 years now since a running back won the Super Bowl MVP. So it doesn't usually go to the running back. But again, McCaffrey's a different story.
He's going to touch the ball 25 times.
Yep. In
the
game. No, I know. I'll probably bet it.
Yeah. And the name power of Mahomes gave it to Mahomes over Damien Williams a couple of years ago.
Yep. And there was a year, who was it? Deion Lewis. Yeah. Who was the running back for the Patriots where he scored the game winning touchdown? Oh, maybe it was James White. Like, he had three or four touchdowns. Brady threw a pick six in the game. You really could have given it to White. So the tie goes to the quarterback here, but I'll probably end up betting McCaffrey. It's not a bad angle.
Remember, that's the thing. You got to remember.
I'm trying to find it.
With all these wagers, like who ultimately are voting on these things, and a lot of time it's like very simple handicap.
It would be cruel because we had Purdy 22-1 to win regular season MVP. It would be cruel if he won the Super Bowl MVP and we had no money on it. But
that's the way the year should end, right?
Yeah.
With that. Exactly. And that'll be the way that the group chat ends this week. Guys, we'll be back next week. Good luck this weekend in the divisional round.
Lots of great information there in the Gamma group chat. Hope you guys can find yourself some wagers for this weekend. Let's recap the wagers Bear has made so far before we get to our best bets. So far, Bear has Tampa Bay +6.5 on the road at Detroit. And he has the Niners hosting the Packers, Niners -9.5. All right, Bear, time for our best bets. Where are you going with your best wager?
You can make that Niners -9.5 my best bet. I teased it up and gave all the reasons earlier on. So, I think the Niners will take care of business. And we've seen this deal before with underdogs winning. And then that second game, you kind of get that dose of reality. I alluded to the Giants-Eagles last year, gave the number about how touchdown underdogs that win in the wild card tend to in the divisional round during the group chat as well. So I'm going to follow the football acumen and follow the history there. So I will, I'll lay the 9.5 there with the Niners as my best bet.
I'm going to stay in the same game. I have Niners over 30.5 points. Will made the case early in the game with group chat for this wager, but let's go back. It was 4 weeks ago now. The Packers were at the Panthers. They allowed 30 points to the Panthers. Do you know how many points, Bear, the Panthers scored the next 2 weeks of the National Football League season? Do you remember?
I believe that number was like six.
Zero. The Panthers scored 0 points after the Packers game in the final 2 weeks of the season. It was zero, yeah. We saw the Cowboys eventually get over the team total, took a late touchdown, but the Joe Barry Packers defense is not good. They're not good at particularly anything. I have the Niners healthy, rested, off a bye, everyone's full ready to go. And when they have everyone roaring bear, they score a ton of points. So I think the Niners come out early, score points, keep the foot down on the Packers. I have the Niners here over 30.5 points. I want to remind everyone, it's not too late to play the free Fox Super 6 game for Division Around Weekend. Just download the Fox Sports app right now and make your picks for a chance to win your share of $10,000 in weekly cash prizes. Bear, four games there for people to choose for the free Fox Super 6 game. Again, I'll be in Buffalo this weekend. I'll be freezing my tail off. I looked at weather. Not that bad, Bear. High of 27, like low of 20. It's better than it is now.
That's not terrible.
I'll stay warm.
That's not terrible. No, like, it's not terrible. How's the wind? Like, the wind will obviously be a determinant on how good.
I have not. That's the problem. I'll be warm. I ain't a problem being warm. I have plenty of clothes. I just need a tailgate to go to. Tailgate, parking pass. Hit me up. Hit me up, people. I'm coming to Buffalo Saturday. I'm going to see Niagara Falls maybe too. I've never seen it before. I might drive there.
Yeah, Saturday. You should. You may as well. Yeah, absolutely. Sabres in town maybe on
a little Niagara Falls.
I don't know. Are the Sabres in town on Friday?
I'm not going to miss. I get there Saturday. I'm not missing the game Saturday to go to the Sabres game. So I'll get in Saturday, go to Niagara Falls, maybe gamble a little bit on the Canadian side and then hop back over and settle in for a night of football on Saturday.
Beautiful. I didn't get into this earlier in the group chat. Like, now that you talk about going to the game, like, why is Buffalo not putting some type of roof on their new stadium to avoid the issue that we had last week? Like, I get you want a home field advantage. Maybe don't fully enclose it. Maybe you do like a pseudo roof like SoFi has, where you got the roof, but you still have the outdoor kind of environment there. Or you have like you have in Dallas, where you got the whole kind of over the field, but the stands are kind of covered.
Yeah.
Kind of like a hard, like, I don't know. I guess they want people to come to Buffalo and free opposing teams to come and have a massive home field event. That would be the reason, I would imagine. But, boy, it seems like you could avoid a lot of problems by putting some type of roof on the stadium.
But remember, Bear, the game got got postponed and moved because no one could get to the stadium. Now, obviously, the stadium was full of snow when people arrived, but it didn't get canceled because of the actual, like, stadium conditions. Sure. They would have played the game there if anyone could get to the game. So I am outdoor on grass football. Like, I think everyone should have grass and everyone should play outdoors. So you won't find me arguing for a dome there. But so wish me luck. I'm sitting in the Bill section. I chose tickets in the Bill section because I want to get beers thrown on me when I root for the Chiefs. But if you're there, I'm not hard to miss. I'll have a Chiefs beanie on, got some Chiefs sweatpants, got my big Carhartt jacket, and I'm looking forward to a night. Look, the Bills, Bear, I think, are treating this like their fans are like, this is the Super Bowl, right? They're playing the Chiefs at home, and the Chiefs are really good still. Like, their defense is really good. Like, this could be a Chiefs win, and it'd be fun to be there.
Good luck with that, my friend.
I want some
live stream. I want some Instagram videos, like, during your tailgates and whatever.
I got you.
Another episode in the book. We'll be back next week. I'll be down in New York again with you next week. Preview AFC and NFC championship, or whatever else happens to pop up. Maybe a Australian Open semifinals or finals. Who the heck knows? Whatever's going on in the world of sports. So for Will, for Sammy, for Jeff, I'm Bear. Thanks again for listening, downloading, rating, and reviewing for wherever you consume your podcasts and digital media. Thank you for checking us out throughout the year. And remember, the less you bet, the more you'll lose when you make.